Welcome to the Simply Be Found Huddle, where we talk about everything business and we open all kinds of cans of worms and have just a general conversation about a lot of stuff. Today we have our guest Max on. Max, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. Nice good. To see you guys. Thank you for having me.
Nice to join us.
Well, thank you for joining us on. So Max, can you tell everybody a little bit about you, your background, and what you have going on?
Sure. So my background came to this beautiful country from the former Soviet Union 32 years ago. Had to support myself through college, got a degree in finance, worked in corporate world for 4 years, realized that's not for me because I always saying that I was kissing the wrong butts and that was not getting me anywhere. I'm like, you know, I'm done. So July 4th of 2002 was my real freedom day. That's the day when I went on my own, had many businesses, some successful, some not so much, but that gave me a platform to move to the next businesses. And right now, I am a CEO of three companies. One is providing bookkeeping to franchise brands in the United States. It's called Bookskeeping. Then I'm franchising this concept. We are the only bookkeeping franchise available in the United States. So we sell our own bookkeeping franchises. We actually have one in Denver, and the 7-year NFL veteran bought it. So he's running a successful franchise in Denver. I know you guys are from there. And then also I opened the franchise brokerage. If somebody not a good match for bookkeeping, they go and we help them to buy a franchise. We have over 600 franchises to choose from. Completely free service. We only get paid if somebody ends up buying a franchise. So that's more consultative.
A little bit different operation than what Francorp used to play in that whole Chicago game.
For sure.
But so my background is I've done marketing. I've been in this space for 30-some years. I owned part of a restaurant business and also was manager over the trading and everything for all the franchisees and helped manage the franchisor piece. So I've touched on that side a little bit in all those different worlds that I've gotten to work with. I actually worked with a couple people from Francorp a long time ago. So I get that entire side. And franchising can be a really good model if it's done right, but there's some really bad models out there that just kind of just don't make a lot of sense. Or is that still the case today that you're seeing?
Yes. And that's the job of a consultant. They don't even call us brokers. I don't call myself broker. I just use this word to explain what I'm doing, but it's really a consultant because I've been around franchising for 10 years and a lot of the brands that I represent, I know the CEOs of them personally. And you know, I'm not going to give more information than I would about the companies that I don't know anything about, but I can say, hey, I know this guy. We've had drinks on several occasions. He's really cool. So I really feel that this is the one you should go with. Okay. In my opinion, I could be completely wrong because some people like more structure. There are some franchises that are owned by big conglomerates and they right. have thousands of franchisees, but I can tell you that a franchisee of this brand will never see the CEO. Maybe at the conference, they'll, you know, have take a picture with them. And I've been to this conference and I've seen it. You know, franchises that have, you know, 10 to 40 units, like all my franchisees, my cell phone is on their speed dial. So they literally can text me and I get back to them right away. But I'm telling them when we get to a certain level, I physically won't be able to do that. So you have to take all of that into consideration. Is it good or bad, Robert? Not really. This is just different. And that's why my job is to educate people and say, hey, you have this option or you have that option.
Well, and I think that's why having that person that is kind of that in between to be able to work that out, because there might be a franchise out there that is very much a fit for you, but there's some out there that are not a fit for you, and you have to find that right one that's going to be able to hit your goals and hit what kind of money that capital that you have to be able to put into it and all the stuff that's in between there. So I mean, I think that's a huge area and a huge model that has to be hit.
And if I can add something, people, in my opinion, make mistake. They look only at the dollar amount. Okay, it's going to cost me that much to open this franchise. This shouldn't be the only concern. Is it important? Absolutely. I can give you an example. I'm working with a candidate right now, and they're thinking about opening a tanning salon. And it's very lucrative business, but they have two options in their territory. The established one that has a support, or the brand new one that has zero franchisees. They only have corporate units, but it's cheaper to open. So I'm not saying one is better than the other, but you have to like take that in consideration. I mean, the later never done it before, so really you would be their first franchisee. Yes, it will have a support, but do you want to take chances and possibly making more money? So that's a lot of the thing you have to think about. It's not just the dollar amount, how much it's going to cost.
So franchise, I've never done a franchise. I've looked into buying one at once in my career, and it was too restrictive for me. I mean, it didn't, for my personality type, it wasn't going to be a good fit. Is that, do you try to get people, you know, if they're kind of out there and they want to be blue sky things, does a franchise work for those kinds of people?
So look, franchising is not for everybody. I probably will not make a good franchisee because, you know, it's very hard to, you know, I'm an entrepreneur, but, you know, at some point I'm considering buying it, but passively managing it. You don't want me to manage it because they'll come in, oh, let's do this, let's do that. Having said that, the best idea in franchising came from franchisees. I forgot which restaurant chain, but I heard the presentation of the CEO. They were doing burgers and fries. And then one franchisee decided, without letting them know, started selling ice cream. And they're like, okay, you're in trouble, dude. You're not supposed to do it. And the corporate team traveled there and saw that 50% of the revenue is from ice cream. Now they added it in all 500 units. It's a big chain. Again, I don't remember which one. And they're just killing it. But the idea came from a franchisee. So I tell all my franchisees, I'm open to the ideas. Will I say yes to all of them? Absolutely not. If I had somebody who didn't buy a bookkeeping franchise because they wanted to change corporate color to match the logo of their CPA firm, which was blue and something. I'm like, no, our corporate colors are black, white, and red. It's not changing. They have a trademark. they have all of that. No, it's just not. But yeah. I appreciate you trying. It's not going to happen. Okay? So there are some rules that you absolutely cannot do it. Bookkeeping, we're not going to be doing taxes. While I own the franchise, we will not be, because we get so many referrals from our CPAs. I don't want to shoot myself in the foot. Would that give us more revenue? Absolutely. Do some of my franchisees want to do it? Yes. But they understand the logic why there is a hard no on that.
Well, we get a lot of people that come and they want to talk to us about it that are franchisees, about using our listings engine, which goes out to about 1,000 different networks, use us for social media. And it's like, well, it depends on what your agreement says. Some of these agreements where they have to do all the marketing, they're not keeping up on technology, is really kind of hurting some of the businesses out there. But then you see another franchise or that lets them handle the marketing, lets them handle the social, lets them manage their Google business profile. I'm like, you have to read over your agreements to be able to know what you're able to do. And I could advise you. I could go through and I'm like, just hand this over to your franchisor, because this is what I'm seeing and this is where it's hurting you right now. Hand that over to your franchisor. They're either going to be responsive about it and go, yeah, we need to look at that. Or they'll just go, it didn't go next. But I'm like, I can't answer your franchise questions on that, because marketing gets really weird when you're talking about franchising because of those agreements. Do you agree on that? Or is it,
yeah,
are you
seeing anything different to that? No, absolutely. And look, when I go to large franchise events, that's why marketing companies want to have agreement with franchisor, because then they're pushing it to the franchisees. But yes, I've seen some franchisors saying, you know, like it could be a real estate staging. When you buy a house, somebody puts the furniture. They let you do your own marketing. So your job is to get to real estate agents, however you want to do it. But somebody that does, I don't know, sport clips, for example, they're not going to allow you to do your own stuff. They have 3,000 units. They can't afford that, because you're going to promise somebody something. It's not going to happen. They're going to get sued. So that's also the reason, the legal barriers.
Oh, there's a ton of legal barriers on that. And I mean, you have to play by their playbook. And that's part of that decision process, and why you have to have a good consultant when you're picking one, to know, this is what I want to be able to do. This is my skill sets. This is my personality. Is one a good fit? And I've always thought that when someone's looking at it, because you just don't do it because you think it's going to be a great idea and you want to change everything. Yeah, you should probably go start your own at that point. Mm-hmm. but you know, I've been wrong. So the one franchisee that I thought when I was doing franchisors, the one I thought was going to fail because they were buying a franchise for their son, ended up taking over the whole company. Now, the mom and dad were running it, and didn't, they were planning on retiring, so that didn't happen. But they bought more stores, and bought all the corporate stores later on. And I'm like, I didn't see that one coming. I look at that, and I go, huh, I was wrong on that one. I figured that one wasn't going to make it because they were buying their kid a store that they didn't, and they couldn't hold down a job. I was like, huh, all right, well, something new. But I mean, it's there's all kinds of different stuff there.
So Max, I was studying with the MBA students and stuff like that, there was case studies that were done on franchises, and some of the most successful, depending on the personality type, without dropping names, I don't want to promote anybody, but they found that people that were like farmers that followed the corporate book, because there's a playbook that's all there to the T, were more successful than the people that were MBA students who came in and said, oh, we need to change this, change that. And they were always trying to modify everything. Do you see that going on in your world too?
Absolutely. I can tell you that ex-military, they're making great franchisees on average because, you know, they know how to, follow the rules, because there are a lot of rules that you can do. Younger franchises, when I say younger, like emerging, like bookkeeping, for example, we give more freedom to people. But again, to a certain reason, I gave you an example that we're not doing taxes, we're not doing some services. But, you know, if somebody can follow the rules, then yes, they should be successful. But I do suggest to run the personality test. But the biggest question is, are you coachable or not? Okay, if the question is no, if you're not coachable, then I can tell you, any franchise is not for you, okay? Because this is not where you get with the franchisor and start arguing about everything. It's not going to get you anywhere, okay? It has to be a communication. I always tell all the franchisees, you are going into business with franchisor. You just happen to be a majority partner owning 90 to 95%, and then based on the royalties, the franchisor owns, you know, the rest of it. So we are minority partners as a franchisor, but it's very important that we are on the same page. If you're not successful, we are not successful, because all the franchises live off royalties.
They do. Yep. And that's a huge piece of that. So when you're going out and you're looking for somebody for and trying to find someone, what's that process look like today?
So are we talking about when I'm looking for somebody who wants to buy a franchise or somebody wants to buy a bookkeeping franchise?
Let's go both. Okay. Because I thought about that after I asked that question. I'm like, I'm kind of curious which way he answers that.
You know, I have three hats. I need to know which one I'm wearing right now.
Let's put on all three hats. Let's see what happens. All right. Let's call a hat trick.
All right, sounds good. It's your show. You're the captain. when I'm looking for somebody to buy a bookkeeping franchise, they don't have to be accountants. I'm going to let you on a secret. I'm not an accountant. You know, my team is making fun of me. I have no idea how to, you know, work with QuickBooks. I've done it over 20 years ago, but my job is different. I'm the CEO. I'm running the company, you know, and I have a team of very, very qualified accountants who know how to do everything. But it's just not my, you know, thing. But if you've never seen financial statement in your life, you hate numbers, and you absolutely don't know why you're doing it, then probably accounting franchise is not for you, okay? So I'm looking for somebody who has finance background, who has accounting background. If they're a CPA, that would be even better. But again, we don't discriminate. As I mentioned, our franchisee in Denver played 7 years in the NFL. Yes, he went to Columbia to get his finance degree, but, you know, he never had any accounting jobs, you know, but he's doing really good. He's also a franchisee of other brands as well. So it's a business. Like when I opened this business, I knew I'm not an accountant, so I knew we need to hire one. So I just concentrate on business development. If you know how to sell, you know how to talk to people, you'll be really successful. But know that you won't be able to do everything yourself. You just have to hire the person right away, okay? That's when I'm looking for somebody for accounting franchise, for bookkeeping. When I'm looking for a candidate for a franchise, I want to hear what they like to do, what their hobbies are, Do they want to be in the business 7 days a week, or do they want to go and just check on business every other day? That really depends on that. The problem is people mix their hobbies with, you know, the future business. I tell somebody, if you have the best recipe of pizza that your grandmother taught you, and it's the best pizza ever, that's not what you're going to be selling in your pizza franchise. They will not let you to run with that. That you have to sell the same pepperoni, same cheese, and some whatever else that they approve the recipes. So if you're a great cook, doesn't make you a good owner of the restaurant business. You can be the owner of restaurant business and don't know how to turn on the stove. Okay, because they tell you everything. So my job as a consultant to find out what you really like to do. It's really cool when I come up with choices for my candidates and they're like, oh, I've never thought about it. I never knew that going and picking dog poops is such a lucrative business. But believe it or not, it is. No, it's like companies, they pay a lot of money to go around construction site, apartments, and so on and so forth.
No, so we actually have some clients here.
We've got a lot of clients that are dog poop guys and gals.
Yeah. And they do really well. It's recession proof too, because the dogs poop no matter what, you know?
Nobody likes to clean up shit.
That's exactly what that would be really clean up shit. You know, so. It's a good trademark. Yeah. I like that.
I mean, as a business owner, that's about what you do. You're the head janitor. You clean up shit all day. But in that job, you literally clean up shit all day.
Yeah. Well, call it what it is. You know, when people try to come up with this weird stuff explaining what you're doing, like, you know, as a broker, I'm in franchise matchmaking. So I'm trying to find the best franchise for the best candidate. Okay. And if it's not a match, then it's going to be me saying, hey, you're going to be single for the rest of your life. Doesn't mean it's bad or good, but you probably franchising is not for you. Go to buy an existing business. So, you know, do something else. So that's what consultants do. Hopefully that answers your question.
No, that does. So thank you for sharing that. So on your bookkeeping franchise, how are you guys doing marketing for your franchisors? Do you guys let them do some of that marketing, or are you guys doing 100% of it for them, or how's that working?
You're probably talking about franchisees, how we do it for our
franchisees. Yeah, sorry.
Yes. Yeah. No, it's all good. People confuse it all the time. I do it myself. So we make them use a certain amount of the budget for local marketing, because the first thing any new business owner trying to do is just, well, I'm not going to spend any money. I'm going to hold on to as much money as possible. And we just tell them, okay, you have to use minimum amount, but to do local marketing. So it's social media, blogs. We have a company that does it on their behalf. But we tell them this is a bare minimum just for your client to go and check you out and see that you legit. We on corporate side have our own marketing team. Right now, bookkeeping in most markets in the first page of Google organically. Like, we stopped paying for Google AdWords because we are already in some positions, we are number one position. So out of 125,000 bookkeeping businesses, I consider that being pretty good. Okay. And then go and pay for the keywords. Doesn't work for us because people like Intuit, who I love dearly, they buy that and they don't care about the budget. So you put bookkeeping franchise, the first thing comes up is Intuit. And they're already paying like $10 or whatever, $8 for the keyword, even though they don't sell bookkeeping franchises. So why would I go and pay $12 and to be on top of Intuit if we are the only bookkeeping franchise out there today? So if somebody really digs deeper, they'll see that Intuit doesn't sell franchises. We use their product. Last year, we were number 8 in the country on number of subscriptions sold and managed for Intuit. That's pretty big, you know, for QuickBooks Online. They know who we are. We are very good friends and partners. But again, they don't sell franchises. We do.
Okay.
No, it's awesome. So with your bookkeeping franchises, do they, and I know you're not an accountant and all that stuff, but do you guys help businesses move over from being on desktop version of QuickBooks over to being onto the online version?
That's part of the things that we do. Most of the people already on online version, because Intuit stopped supporting desktop a year or two ago. They were talking about it for a long time, and then COVID happened, so they kind of prolonged the life of QuickBooks desktop. So now it's all online, which a lot of people hate, because obviously it costs money and they have to pay for the subscription. But I always tell the end users, the clients of bookkeeping, I'm like, look, you're running a business. You want to be successful. If you're really complaining about, you know, $50 subscription every month, you have bigger problems, okay? Because if that's your only problem, dude, then probably something is wrong with your business. You have to look at your business model, okay? And by the way, as the Intuit partner, we're passing on pretty much all the discount that we get to all of our clients, you know? So we give discount and like, hey, have it. Whether you use bookkeeping or not, here it is. So it's like a gift. It doesn't cost you anything for the rest of your business life. You're going to get the discount. So we do that all the time. I'm not looking to become rich on that, but that's a good foot in the door for us.
See, I'm picking on the guy in the middle. I'm picking on Dean because he's still on the desktop version.
I still have desktop. They still support me, by the way, Max. But right now I still have support, you know?
They do, but it will stop. They before they were supporting desktop every 3 years, for 3 years, and then they stopped. I mean, at some point, depends what version you're on, you know, they will stop and you can still use it, but you won't be able to download stuff. So you have to do a lot of things manually. And look, we still have clients on desktop. So for the same reason, like, well, I was born on desktop, I'll die on desktop. You know, I'm like, okay, it's your power, you're paying for it, but you have to provide us, you know, with the servers to host it on. And you have to understand it's going to take us longer at some point to work on it. Okay. So, which means you'll end up paying more.
Gotcha. So I'm going to ask the question, since we're talking QuickBooks, and the reason why I'm struggling is because my staff doesn't like the looks of online QuickBooks. Is there a way of making it look like the classic? And can you do that?
You cannot do that, and there is a reason for it. But I can tell you one thing, Dean. QuickBooks Online changes every year, if not every month. So if you didn't like something 2 years ago, I advise for you to go and check that out, because it changed a lot. There was a time when QuickBooks wasn't up to par, but they changed their game. They like really now monopolized the small business market. We had Xero in the US. They were huge, and we work with Xero as well. I like them. They're very big in Australia, New Zealand, Europe. They tried to dominate the market, and at some point they were doing that. I was thinking QuickBooks Online is going to be gone from the big picture. But then something happened on Intuit. They saw the value. They invested money. And now Intuit is, you know, single digits of the market in the United States. I'm talking about Xero is a single market digits in the and Intuit is over 90% for the small business.
Yeah, okay. I was gonna ask you, but thank you for clarifying that.
Sure.
Well, it's one of those things when you're building software, you do a lot of testing, you put stuff out, especially as a big corporation. And there's a lot of hiccups that happen when you take something and turn it from a desktop version to a SaaS version, which anybody that doesn't know what SaaS is, that software as a service. But it's one of those things to where that's a big leap from a programmatic standpoint. There's a lot of stuff that comes into it. Now, when you mix in all of the stuff for finance, you have all kinds of new hoops you have to jump through to be able to put all that online. But I mean, it's crazy when you look at everything there.
And look, people, majority of people, they are afraid of change. I remember when Windows went from, what was it, 97 to 10, I don't remember. But they had like completely brand new. I'm like, I hate this. I want my old Windows because, you know, I don't know where the buttons are. I absolutely BS, you know, just give me my Windows back. And then, you know, after like months, you're like, oh, that makes sense. That's more like, okay, I understand how it's working. Same goes with QuickBooks Online. You know, you have to just give it opportunity. Whenever Apple comes up with the new iOS system, I'm like, crap, you know, why didn't it like the old
they move everything.
They move everything. You know, the icons look different, you know. So
you moved everything. Well, it's talking about Windows, we get to go to from 10 to 11 here pretty quick.
I'm just going with the flow.
Oh, no, but I'm just saying we're gonna see experience it again.
I remember MS-DOS, I remember 3.1, I remember, I mean, all those steps that I remember, what was it? Windows Millennium or 2000 that absolutely sucked. And it was Microsoft's worst release they've ever made. But I mean, there's all kinds of stuff that happens, and you learn from the feedback that you get from each and every one of those pieces. So it's amazing to me. But going back, you made a comment, Max. You made a comment, if someone can't afford $50 a month, we see that on our platform all the time. We're $39. We get people that come in, they buy the platform for $39. They think it's going to be that magic bullet or that magic wand to go, and all of a sudden these leads are just going to pour in overnight. It's like, that's not the way this works. Like, that was when I asked $39. And I'm like, we probably shouldn't have spent it on this. If you would have chatted with me, I would have told you, don't do it. Go buy yourself a hamburger and figure out what you're going to do next.
I agree with you. So look, price is important, but you know, that shouldn't be the only consideration. You have to understand what you're getting for this price. So again, if you're just simply living your life, you know, making a decision about everything based on the dollar amount, I honestly don't believe you can be successful in the long term. So it's all not all about the money. You have to invest money to make money. Okay.
Yep. And one of the things that Rob and I talked about, you know, talk about the low cost. We always talk about the little things can hurt businesses if it's cumulative. Like if you have a 100 things that are $50 a month and you don't need all of those, then you need to look at some things. But some things like accounting, you have to have that. It's like our list, you know, like listings engine we have. You have to have something there of some kind, you know, because that's important for business kind of thing. And I think I agree with you on that. Now, I'm assuming that if somebody's using your service, if there's upgrades and changes, you're there to support as well. You're qualified to help with different programs?
Yes, but on QuickBooks Online, they're just making the change as they go. Okay, it looks like this screen, and then they're changing, they're adding a button. So like really nothing changes. Every business pays for its own subscription. The difference between desktop and QuickBooks Online, and one of the reasons, Dean, they did it to make more revenue, it's one EIN, one legal entity, one QuickBooks Online. They will not allow you to use the same QuickBooks Online for two legal entities. Physically impossible, okay?
Right.
Before, people had a desktop and had 50 businesses on it. Like, right.
That's the reason why most people didn't want to make the switch, because they didn't want to do it.
Absolutely, and that's why, in my opinion, a lot of older accounting firms didn't like it, because they're like, well, I mean, we were making all the money still charging for QuickBooks subscription, even though we had literally had 50 on one. Now they're not making this money because really they have to charge $50 or whatever. Actually, the regular price for QuickBooks Online is $65 for the essential package. But if you have like you need departments and you have inventory, then it's $99 a month. That's before our discount. But nevertheless, it's, you know, adds up, and people are like, well, screw that. I'm not saying you're doing that for this reason, Dean. I don't mean it, but a lot of people doing it to save this $65. Okay. And then they come up and say, well, we just don't like the look. When did you check it last time? Oh, 7 years ago, QuickBooks Online sucked. I'm like, well, maybe you should go and check it again and then see where you at.
Right. Well, I still pay a subscription for mine because I have payroll and a few other things that go with mine. So I still have a monthly subscription. And so it's still there. It's just that my staff doesn't like the layout, and I have to fight with them over it. And so we have to pull that trigger at some point. And that's where it's good to talk to somebody to say it's going to happen again.
But look, desktop is also a subscription now, really. Yes, what it is. There's no difference. It just, you know, they just still call it desktop for people who don't want to make a change. But it's a subscription now. You don't pay one price. You still pay every month.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I think people don't realize that.
Well, almost all software is a subscription at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody learned inside. So SaaS opened that door. So your very first SaaS products that were out there made the way to where, look how much revenue we can make. And they'll keep paying us for the support. You don't have to build it one time and then support them on for the next, you know, unlimited amount of years past and then go broke. They learned how to be able to pull the money out there. I mean, that's a whole entire market of its own. It's evolved. AI is changing it. I'm sure AI is changing bookkeeping like crazy. I know it's changing the finance world a lot. I had my guest yesterday that was on the huddle was he does software for being able to do the stock market and different portfolio changes and investments. So I guess my question for you, Max, is how's AI changing the bookkeeping world?
So Now, if you don't use the word AI, nobody even want to talk to you. But a lot of the time, AI is, you know, I think overrated, and I'll explain to you why. Like, for example, we tried to build an internal robot that was based on AI to free up a team from some processes, and we did that. We tested it, and we found out that one human can do more and can do it faster than what robot can, because it had a limitation for the functions that we needed. So it did not work for us. So sometimes no is a good answer. AI is not going to be the answer for everything. Having said that, let's use QuickBooks. They use a lot of AI into their function. So now what took, for example, 4 hours to do 4 or 5 years ago now takes, you know, 1.5 hours because they just added a lot of stuff. They're doing it. So now, instead of having time to work on 2 clients, we work on, you know, 4 or 5 clients. And the way we're doing it, we are bringing the prices down. We're becoming more competitive. And, you know, people love that. What some bookkeeping firms doing, without naming the names, they're actually increasing their prices, even though they it's taking them less time to work on it. Is that a great business model in terms of making more money? Absolutely. But is it going to work in the long term? No, because at some point, client going to figure out, well, if I can get it done for $199, why am I still paying for $400? Why am I still paying $400? I talked to a company yesterday, a potential client. They have a bookkeeper who comes every 2 weeks for 15 to 20 hours to do the work. And when they gave me the whole scope, I'm like, well, I'm going to have a hard time to explain why we need 3 hours a week. So like, really, we're going to slash the pricing by half. And he goes, the owner goes, well, she's been doing it for 25 years. So she's still doing everything manually because that's how she's doing it. It's working for us. We never touch it. But now this person is retiring. So that's why we're talking to you. We want to bring the technology. So a lot of technology that we're using already have AI, and we're embracing it. I save a lot of time using AI to be a CEO. There is no way I would be able to run 3 companies. And, you know, between 3 companies, I have employees in 10 countries. So, like, really dealing with everybody, knowing what's going on. I mean, meetings here, meetings there. I don't even know what time zone I'm at. I was just in Barcelona last week. We have an office in Barcelona. I'm in California right now, you know, so, but, with the technology, it's working. ChatGPT, voice enhanced. I mean, people look at me like I'm an idiot. Sometimes I'm going talking to myself. What if we do this? What if we do this? So before I walk, from the TSA to the gate, I already have business plan for the next venture. So you have to embrace it. If you are thinking that you're not going to need AI, you're delusional, in my opinion.
I agree with you on that. It's how you use it. I think AI is a great assistant, but it's not an end all be all, and it can't be trusted at full scale to do everything on its own. I think it's a wrong move for a lot of the companies that are making it what they call an agent, and that it just does it, and you don't have to worry about it because you don't want that thing making absolutely every single decision about your business. I mean, some of the stuff it puts out, sometimes I have to scratch my head and go, we were having a great conversation until you decided to respond with that. What the hell? Where the hell did that come from?
I know. Look, like, we would not be able to have this conversation if one of the three of us would be a bot, and even the best bot out there. It's different because you don't know where the conversation is going to go. So don't replace the humanity from that. But, you know, let's eliminate the admin task. Like, that's what I've done. I eliminated a lot of tasks that are now done by, you know, by a bot. But, you know, it's still me, believe it or not. You're still stuck with my Russian accent. Okay, so a bot probably would not have that.
I had a good friend that did programming with me that was from the Russian area, and he had the Russian accent. And he goes, it's one thing that I can never take away, they'll never be able to take my Russian accent because it's here to stay, and I'll never be able to get rid of it no matter how long I'm here.
So I'm gonna pick on your culture for just a second, Max. Do you just fly off the handle and use all the cuss words that you can think of when people make you mad? Is all my Russian friends that I have, they all just like, they're here and all of a sudden they're like boom, they're off somewhere and screaming and yelling at me. I didn't know if that's a cultural thing or just the friends I have.
No, look, it's actually the way we talk. We're very passionate. The funny story. So bookkeeping was co-founded with my wife at the time. She is now my ex-wife, but she's still part of the business. We're still, you know, working together really well. And, you know, so there are cases like that. So not everybody has to fight when they get separated. It's been like 10 years since we got divorced, but we're still
working.
And we both started. But it's funny. So we have an employee. She's my director of operations. She's been with us for almost 11 years. And she remembers when we were in my office and, you know, talking, she was thinking that we are going to kill each other, but we were just very passionate about, you know, talking, what's going on with me? Let's do that. It's just the way we talk. And that, I mean, nothing bad was happening, but she was like, oh my God, do I call 911 or do I just go to the restroom? And actually, she's still talking about it. It's so funny.
You know, a lot of people take me the wrong way because I get really passionate and I get really loud when I get passionate, especially if I've got 10 things going on and I all of a sudden have something that I shouldn't have to be focusing on that I have to stop and do it. I can come across as the biggest asshole, and I'm really not even angry. I watched some of my videos. I'm like, I wasn't even angry. I was just loud. I'm a loud person. I mean, but that comes, I think, from, and Dean, correct me if I'm wrong on this, it comes from my German background and my Italian background. I can go 0 to 60. I could be like, all right, let's go. We can pump this out. But that also comes with some benefits to it too, because I've been at conferences and they didn't have a speaker and I was like, I'll do it. Well, do you have anything to talk about? Sure, I'll wing it. Let's go.
Look, I believe that healthy confrontation is actually good for you. I add the word healthy. I'm not talking about, you know, aggravating assault, but I'm talking about, you know, disagreement or whatever, because that's how, like, me and my co-founder, when we talk about it and we argue, we actually come up with some best ideas. We're just talking. I mean, that's how the name bookkeeping was, you know, we came up with it. We were just playing and like, oh, let's do this. And then we're like, what if we change one letter? We're still arguing who came up with the word. I mean, I think it's me. She thinks it's her. Doesn't matter at this point. We were able to do it. And actually, our lawyer told, there is no way anybody would approve it. You will never get it, you know, copyrighted and trademarked. And we like almost, okay, let's come up with another name. And then we decided, what do we have to lose? We applied, we got it approved from the first try. If we listened to the guy, it would not be named bookkeeping. Okay. I'm just saying, what do we have to lose? So I'm not taking no as an answer. That's how I live my life. I don't know if it's good or bad, but I teach my kids. I'm like, you know, if somebody tells you you're not capable to do that, it means crap. You know, it doesn't mean that you are not able to do it.
So Rob and I will get into debates or something like that, and everybody goes, why are you guys so angry at each other? And I look at Rob, I go, are you angry about this? He goes, no, I'm not. Are you? No, okay, then let's keep going. And then we start yelling at each other again, you know. Sometimes, we get loud, we get obnoxious, and that, as long as you don't, like you said, it's healthy. It's not, you know, you don't demean anybody or anything like that, that, you know, kind of thing. But no, I had to ask because now I'm going to date myself a little bit, Max. When I was working, I was doing some higher education, Gorbachev's minister came over and interviewed me during Perestroika. I think I pronounced that right.
Yes.
In the 80s. And they wanted me to go teach at the University of Moscow. I don't speak Russian, but they were going to send me through, but they wanted me to teach capitalism at the University of Moscow. So that's when my first experience with the Russian culture came about, was through those interview processes.
Yeah, I mean, you know, look, Russia now is obviously different than the former Soviet Union. Yes. Again, I left 32 years ago, so a lot of things changed, the politics, and without getting into it, you know, the whole region is having hard time right now, tough times. And, you know, I feel bad for people. Yes. And, you know, just again, I'm not going to go into that, but just so you understand, I grew up about 30 miles from the Ukrainian border on the Russian side. But back then, when I was growing up, it was the same thing. It's like going from San Diego County to Orange County. You would not know the difference. Everybody was speaking the same language. And now the two countries are fighting. And on my home street, I mean, the drones are flying. And, you know, 40 miles down, the bombs are, you know, people getting killed. So like, honestly, I feel for the people, and, you know, I really hope it's gonna get fixed soon. The sooner the better. That's one thing.
Well, I hope for peace for everybody inside of that whole piece, to where, some level of where peace can be, because in some areas of the world, you're just never going to get peace. We've never had peace. So, sure. I mean, it's just one of those things. So when it comes to something that you said inside of this conversation, Max, about long-term, do you think that a lot of businesses that you consult on the franchise side for looking to be able to either buy a franchise of yours or to get into franchising in general have a hard time at looking at the long-term goal? And has that gotten worse over the last few years than where it was inside of that? And does that make sense of what I'm thinking in my head?
Yeah, if I understand it correctly, look, I think it goes with us as a society having the shorter attention span. I mean, people want, appreciation right now. Like, they don't think, okay, what's going to happen in a year, 2 years, 3 years? If you buy any business, I don't care what it is, unless you paid millions of dollars for it, that's not going to make you a millionaire right away, okay? But again, if you paid millions of dollars, you already were a millionaire. So you have to give it some time. And money make money. When I help my candidates to buy a franchise, I'm like, okay, think about it this way. You buy whatever you're buying, one territory. You make it successful. You already have a system how to do it. Buy a second one. Invest. And before you know, you have five territories, five units of whatever it is. I don't care. And now, all of a sudden, you have 5x revenue. Give it 5 years because, yes, you have to pay for initial investment. And for 5 years, you're just going to get a modest salary. But after 5 years, you're golden. But people are like, no, I'm going to do it. I'm going to make it a business. And then I'm going to pass it on to my kids. Like my kids, they're 19 and 15. They don't want this business. Yeah. They have their own, passions. They have their own careers ahead of them. One of them is a very successful musical producer. Like you talk to him about accounting, he hates it. He's absolutely, and both of me and his mom are, in finance and accounting, but he's like, good luck. I'm good with music. So, first of all, the people make a mistake deciding for their kids. Oh, my kid is going to be this or that. I have no idea. I'll support whatever they want to do. But they want to go to college. They don't want to go to college. So people, back to your question. Sorry, I disgrace, but long-term goals, they actually, you have to think, where do you want to be in 10 years, 5 years, 3 years? So that's how we grow the business right now. Okay, what is the goal? Where I want to be in 5 years? So in order to get there, what do I have to do for the next 3 years? 1 year, a quarter. So I go from five-year goal back to my quarterly or monthly goals.
Well, I think that's a huge piece. That's a good way of being able to say that, because I think Amazon has ruined a lot of us for our attention spans, because now we get stuff, same-day delivery and all this different crap. But I mean, it's one of those things to where business owners have to understand, especially not everything is going to be instant, and you have to be able to put some time and be able to work in your business. And it doesn't matter if you're buying a franchise or if you're starting a brand new business, it's going to take a little bit of work. I'm seeing more and more businesses that we're coaching on our side where they don't even really want to put the work in to be able to do it. It blows my mind. I don't understand it, because that's never been my culture. It's never been my way of doing things. So I was kind of curious if you were seeing the same stuff.
No, absolutely. I'm seeing it. But I just tell people, when you pick a business, think about it, that it has to be a subscription business. If you have to sell one thing and then go find a customer again, even if your ticket is higher, it's still more work for you. If it's bookkeeping business or, tanning salon, it's a membership model for tanning salon. So you get paid the same whether you use or gym, so you sell to more people, but you get them for, a year, 2 years, depends for how long. Yep. Versus you sell, whatever it is, you're a recruiter. You find one deal and there are recruiting franchises. It's a great business again, but you find one deal, you get very good commission, but then they might not come back to you for a year or two, and you will not make the revenue again. So again, when you think about opening a business, think about the subscription model, even if it's a service.
No, I agree on that. I mean, subscription solves a lot of stuff just because of the sell side, and you don't have to keep going out there. I feel bad. I mean, for like the roofers and the different contractors, that's a one-time sale. I mean, it's one of those things. They have to work a lot harder because they're probably not going to need another roof in 2 years, unless it's another. I mean, especially here in Colorado. I mean, we're not getting hail like we were.
It's true, but then if they do maintenance, then you right. know a lot of private equity is going around trying to buy the maintenance companies because it's a projected revenue for so much time. So right now it's a big deal in any industry. If you have you know a model, subscription model, service or product, then PE comes in and takes you because they just, then they use economy of scale to grow this business. So it's very, very popular. So think about it if you want to sell. I just had I met with somebody. They had, you know, 20 yoga studios, something like that. And they sold it for, you know, a lot of money, millions of dollars. And, you know, if you think about it, they were just small yoga studios, you know, somewhere in Nevada. But they actually were very successful doing it because they grew the subscription model and then private equity came in and snatched them.
So I've done the whole private equity. I've done the whole mergers and acquisitions and venture capital. I advise for multiple groups at this point. And that's one thing that they're looking at is how do you turn common everyday things into a subscription or a service model? And they're playing with a lot of different stuff there because there's a lot more value if there's a contract or if there's someone paying you every month. It doesn't even have to necessarily be a contract. You can be month to month and still make a lot of money off of it.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. I mean, that's why that whole 10x revenue and all that stuff comes into play when you're selling, which you can't do that if you're just, you know, Joe's Plumbing necessarily unless you have enough contracts inside of there. But it takes all the subscription sides. So I agree on that.
I agree as well. So
Max, if anybody's looking to be able to get their bookkeeping done or they're looking and wanting to be able to explore to be able to do consulting on franchises, how are they going to find your two companies and then any other companies you want to pitch at the same time?
Well, I mean, for now,
I'm going to open the floor for it.
All right. Thank you very much. But it's three companies. So we do bookkeeping for small businesses and for franchises. We sell bookkeeping franchises and also doing the consultant. And I was thinking about it. You guys are on the marketing side. So you understand my challenge was, you know, before I was like naming all the names, all the website, and it just got too long. And again, with my Russian accent, people are like, was it X or was it K? I'm like, yeah, screw that. So right now, the way I found is actually I have my like digital business card where people can go in and choose why they want to talk to me. They eventually will talk to me, but before they have to talk to the team, explain what they're looking for so we can help them the best. And this digital business card is franchisewithmax.com. franchisewithmax.com. So you go in, and again, I promise you're going to talk to me. You're going to hear the same accent. But, you know, again, first you'll have to talk to somebody from the team. Just decide, are you looking to buy a franchise? Which, again, our services are completely free. We only get paid if you buy a franchise, we get commission from a franchisor. But what I'm doing, and that's a little bit unique in the industry, I'm sharing part of my commission. I'm paying for 9 months of sales training out of my own pocket for anybody who buy a franchise through us, and I'm giving a rebate from my commissions, okay? I'm not looking to, like, you know, get all the money because I just want to give it back and make people successful. They go through sales training, I know that they'll be able to sell more and get a bigger revenue. And maybe they'll come in 2-3 years to buy another business from me. Maybe they don't. I don't care. But so franchisewithmax.com is the best way to get a hold of me.
Awesome.
Thanks, Max.
So you're not buying a new yacht every 3 years?
No, I don't have a yacht. Actually, I'm getting seasick, but don't tell anybody.
Thank you so much for joining us today, Max. It was great.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much. It was great.